Okay, so we've gone through the nomenclature.
Ooh, that sounds pretty sophisticated, doesn't it?
Nomenclature. Whoa. Okay. So let's kind of look at this schematic.
Stepping on my worm. This is Dirofilaria immitus, and I just have a little thing hanging at the end of it. Remember, Dirofilaria immitus is along its voim, right? No, you don't. It's obvious that you don't. No. No, you don't. Forget it. All right. Let's just make sure you understand a little bit of schematic anatomy so we're all talking the same thing. Okay, this is supposed to schematize a glomerular capillary. And you notice here that we have these endothelial cells here present. And so that's the endothelial cells of the capillary. And then we have underneath this thing a basement membrane. That's the basement membrane there. And then on the outside of the basement membrane are these visceral epithelial cells that look like they have feet. And so that's why they look like feet, okay, they call them podocytes. So there's these little podocytes here. And there's little spaces, you know, between these feet. Don't you have spaces between your toes? Very good. And so those are spaces between your toes, and those are called slit pores. Now, so we go from blood, endothelial cell, basement membrane, visceral epithelial cells. So if there's visceral, there must be parietal epithelial cells, and those line the Bowman's capsule. Who makes the basement membrane? The answer is the visceral epithelial cell does. This dude, the podocyte, synthesizes the glomerular basement membrane. What keeps albumin out of our urine normally? The strong negative charge of the glomerular basement membrane, okay? Who is responsible for the strong negative charge of the basement membrane? It's a glycosaminoglycan. Who am I? Heparan sulfate, not heparin. That's an anticoagulant. Heparan, H-E-P-A-R-I-N. Heparan, no, H-E-P-A-R-A-N. Sulfate is strong negative charge. So I'm going to ask you a very simple question. If we immunologically damage the visceral epithelial cell, what do we automatically also damage? The basement membrane. Very good. That's a good concept to remember, which means you're going to be spilling a lot of protein in your urine, doesn't it? Which means that you could potentially have nephrotic syndrome if you spilt more than 3.5 grams in 24 hours, doesn't it? I didn't hear yes on that one, just kind of contemplating it there, huh? All right, so now that we know a little bit about the anatomy of this thing and schematic, let's talk about some of the tests that one does on a renal biopsy in evaluating glomerulonephritis. Of course, do stains. We do the routine H&E, hematoxin and eosin stains. We oftentimes do silver stains. We oftentimes do whatever. Who cares what other stains we use? Irrelevant. We do immunofluorescent stains. Ooh. And we know that the pattern could be linear or they could be granular. Some people say lumpy bumpy. So there's only basically two patterns. It's either going to be a linear pattern or it's going to be a lumpy bumpy granular pattern. So what? What does this mean? Patterns. What are these things? They're immune complexes, guys, or they're antibodies that they're detecting. Because immunofluorescence is where you take the biopsy and you have antibodies with a fluorescent tag on them. Let's say you wanted to see if there was IgA in that glomerulus. And so you'd have anti-IgA antibodies with a little fluorescent tag, and if there was any, it would attach to it and produce fluorescence there that you could look at and say, yeah, there's IgA there because it fluoresced. Or IgG, they have tags for that. Or C3, there's tags for that. Fibrinogen, there's tags for that. And so we can get an idea of what's in the glomerulus, okay? And we can get an idea about what its pattern is. Is it a linear pattern or is it a lumpy, bumpy, granular pattern? It doesn't tell us where these different things are. It just tells us that they're there. Okay? What tells us where immune deposits, immunocomplexes are located, is electron microscopy. That will, and we'll see how that looks. Okay, so we do stains, we do immunofluorescence, and we do electron microscopy. So how are we going to really ever tell that the podocytes are fused? You can only really tell that by electron microscopy because they're so small. And so we need to use that to determine a couple things. So let's do something simple now, and I'm going to show you the two patterns. This antibody here, this little Y-shaped thing, remember, they kind of look like that, don't they? Like antibodies, they look like little Ys, don't you? And that's kind of showing this, right? Remember, you've got to have two antigen recognition sites on an antibody, isn't that correct? And then you have the heavy chain right over here. Okay, so let's say this is good pastures, and these are IgG anti-basement membrane antibodies. Okay, so they're in the blood, they get into the glomerular capillary, so what are they directed against, please? The basement membrane, okay? So here's the basement membrane, so don't you think that wherever there was a spot on that basement membrane, you'd see an IgG antibody? Yes or no? Okay, so let's say this is a glomerular basement membrane right here, and I'm an IgG antibody. Everywhere there was a space on here, you'd see an IgG antibody lining along it. There wouldn't be one spot on that basement membrane that wouldn't have one of those IgG antibodies on it, because there's millions and millions of these things. So what if we did a fluorescent tag for IgG overlying a glomerulus? What would we see? You'd see basically an outline of all the basement membranes in that entire stinking glomerulus. Look at it. It's showing you all the basement membrane. Is that linear? Do you see any gaps anywhere in there? So whenever you see this linear pattern like this, where it's just all like that, all over the place, you know it's good pressure syndrome. End of discussion. So the most common cause of a linear pattern on an immunofluorescence is what? Good pressure syndrome. All right, let's go back to this now. What about immune complexes? Again, let's review because it's so... I just had these kinds of questions from my second years. They don't get what immune complexes are. Neither do you, a lot of you. An immune complex is an antigen and an antibody attached to that antigen, and it's circulating in your bloodstream. So it's an antigen and antibody complex. That's what an immune complex is. Give me an example, okay? Lupus, immune complex disease. What's the antigen? DNA. What's the antibody? Anti-DNA. So they attach to each other, and they float around in your bloodstream. And they deposit in different places. In this case, they're going to be depositing in the glomerular capillary. We'll see where later. Okay. That's an immune complex. That means it's type 3 hypersensitivity. Now, because they're immune complexes, they're larger, certainly, than individual antibodies, wouldn't you agree? Because you have antigens and you have antibodies attached together, agreed? So they're bigger. They have different solubilities oftentimes. They have different charges. And so they're not going to deposit in a nice, neat fashion in the glomerulus. Okay? And so depending on their size, depending on their charge, will depend on where they locate themselves. So if they're very big, take that one. That's pretty darn big over there. That probably is not going to be able to get through here. So it's just going to deposit right underneath the endothelial cell nucleus. And so we would have to call that a subendothelial deposit, because they're so big, they can't get through the basement membrane and get under this podocyte over here. They're just too big. And lupus, characteristically, is like that. The immune complexes of lupus, they can't get through the basement membrane. They just hang out underneath the endothelial cells. Okay? And find a little hiding place in there. Well, when we have post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis, and those immune complexes, which are bacterial antigen and an antibody against it, they're very, very small. They're very, very soluble. They can actually go all the way through the basement membrane, and therefore they can deposit underneath the epithelial side. And so we're showing a couple of immune complexes in here depositing on the epithelial side, okay? So notice it's right underneath that epithelial cell. So we call that a subepithelial deposit, okay? Now, how are we going to know where these deposits are? We can't find them by immunofluorescence, but we can see where they are by electron microscopy, because they're electron dense, meaning they increase the density wherever they are. And you'll see what I mean by that momentarily. So, agreeing with me, I hope, that immune complexes have different solubilities, different charges, and they're randomly going underneath the endothelium or underneath the subepithelial surface, they're not going to have a nice, smooth, linear pattern like anti-basement membrane antibodies. Thus, it's certainly not going to look like this, but how about this? If anyone says that's linear, I'm going to shoot you. So what isn't this? This is not good pastures. This is any immune complex disease you want to give me. Lupus, this is post-streptococcal. It could be IgA glomerulonephritis. Now I can get a little bit of hint on what it is depending on what's in there. For example, what's the only disease, only glomerulonephritis, that you can actually only truly diagnose with immunofluorescence? IgA glomerulonephritis. Because if you're going to call it IgA glomerulonephritis, that means this is not IgG in there. That means it's IgA. So the only way you can diagnose accurately IgA glomerulonephritis is to prove that is IgA and nothing else. That's a great board question, actually. Okay, so this is what we call a granular or lumpy, bumpy pattern. And whenever you see it, what does it mean? Immunocomplex type 3 disease, period. That's what it means. Now remember, anti-basement membranes and anti-basement membrane antibodies against the basement membrane is not a type 3, is a type 2. Whereas immune complexes is type 3. All right. Here we go. There are two types of glomerulonephritis. Aren't you happy? Not really. I don't. I wish it was done. Okay, but I'm sorry. It just happens to be there is. It's either nephritic or nephrotic. Can it be both at the same time? No. Okay. Get a life, will you? Okay, I will. But the answer is no. Could one go into another one? Yeah. You mean it can become, start out nephritic and become nephrotic? Yeah. I don't understand. How am I going to know? It's got a definition. If you know the definition, you know. So what's the definition of nephritic syndrome? First of all, it's got a unique test. And you're looking at it. What color is that? What color is that? It's red. And it looks like, you can actually even see a bicontact disc. You can even see a central. So it's a red blood cell, and it's in a mold. What is it? Red blood cell cast. It's unique to nephritic types of glomerulonephritis. Two, because you have inflammation of the glomerulus, okay, you are going to spill protein, but not greater than 3.5 grams in 24 hours, because if it did, then it'd be nephrotic, because it's the definition. So it's mild to moderate proteinuria. You're spilling protein, but not to the same levels as nephrotic syndrome, which means that you would not have pinning edema and ascites with something like this. Now, if you are inflaming the glomerulus, would you have oliguria? Sure. The glomerular capillaries would all be swollen up, and so you would, the glomerular filtration rate would decrease. Yeah, you'd have oliguria. Okay, yeah, you'd have oliguria. Okay. Are you decreasing the reabsorption of sodium by doing that? Or are you not filtering as much sodium as you normally did? Yeah. So do you think it builds up a little bit, retaining a little sodium? Yeah. Okay. So you have run the risk then, if you're retaining a little sodium, of hypertension. So classically, what you see in nephritic types of glomerulonephritis is hematuria, red blood cell cast, oliguria, hypertension, and mild to moderate proteinuria. That's it. That's the definition of it. Okay. I'll give you the definition of nephrotic syndrome. The definition of nephrotic syndrome, it's a different cast, first of all. It's a fatty cast, which we'll show you. So it's not a red blood cell cast, it's fatty. And second, you have greater than 3.5 grams of protein in 24-hour urine sample. And third, you're going to definitely have pinning edema if you lost that much. Okay, so it's absolutely, unequivocally, totally different than nephritic. There's absolutely no way you could confuse it. So if you started out nephritic, that means you had RBC cast, mild to moderate proteinuria, okay, and all that business. Then all of a sudden you start seeing pitting edema. You check the 24-hour urine protein. It's greater than 3.5 grams. So that nephritic went into a nephrotic, and you probably also see some fatty cast showing up. So that's how you could tell you're moving from one to the next. Now, most of the time it doesn't do that, but it is possible to do that. It is possible. So let's just deal. There are not a lot of these, guys. There are not a lot of these, so don't go crappy on me now here. There's not a lot of these things. So there's not a whole lot you're responsible for knowing. All right. All the glomeruli look like this, diffuse. There are too many nuclei in here, definitely over 100 proliferative glomerulonephritis. Okay. This patient had scarlet fever 2 weeks ago, now presents with hematuria, RBC cast, mild to moderate proteinuria, hypertension. He got a little bit of periorbital puffiness, which you always see if you're retaining a little bit of salt. What's your diagnosis? Post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis. Very good. Now all we want to do is look at our first electron micrograph. All right. Now you got to orient yourself. Oh, I'm getting disoriented. Well, just look at this and I'll orient you. That's a lumen. So what must it be a lumen of? Capillary. Okay, so if you know that's a lumen and you've got this thing over here that's bump on the lumen there, that must be an endothelial cell. Good. And what do we know is under an endothelial cell? Basement membrane. So that must mean that this grayish stuff over here is all basement membrane here. And therefore, on this side over here, this must be the what side? The epithelial side. Okay. Now, this is all normal glomerular basement membrane. What the heck are these boulders there that are denser than the normal glomerular basement membrane? Immune complexes. In this particular case, bacterial antigen, antibody, immune complexes. Now, which side are they closest to? Are these things right underneath that endothelial cell? Looks to me like there's a space between them and that, so they're not closer to that, but they look like they're closer to the epithelial side. So they are subepithelial deposits, and that would be good enough to call this post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis. In most cases, with some cortical steroid therapy, it goes away. Every now and then it can come back. I have a second year medical student. Every now and then gets a little bit of hematuria and RBC cast, but it goes away. That's it. Okay, now I'm going to change. Let's do another one. This patient's a woman, 35. She has a positive serum ANA with a rim pattern. So we have a rim pattern on a serum ANA. That means you have anti-double-stranded DNA antibodies present. So what does she have? Lupus. Now you all know that lupus almost always involves the kidney. It's about 6 different types. You only need to know the most common one. That's type 4. You don't even need to know it's called type 4. And it's a diffuse proliferative glomerulonephritis. That's the most common overall one that's seen in lupus. And this is an example of it over here. You can see there's definitely got more nuclei in it, so it's proliferative. Okay? It's got a couple little, what they call wire loops. Forget that. That's not important. The point is, you know it's lupus because the history said it was lupus. And you got a diffuse proliferative glomerulonephritis. And so let's see what the electron micrograph looks in this patient. Now, this one's a lot easier because you can actually really orient yourself quite well because clearly, what are these things? Those are podocytes. So you know that's the epithelial side. So that's easy. Look at those podocytes. Look at that big one there. Boom, boom. That's Bigfoot. Right there's Bigfoot right there. Okay. So if that's the epithelial side, then this must be the lumen. Agreed? These little crab-like structures here must be what? Endothelial cells. And all this black stuff here in the basement membrane must be immune deposits. And what do you think those deposits are? DNA, anti-DNA, immune deposits. Okay? Would you agree that they're right smack underneath the endothelial cell? Yes or no? So why would you describe their location? Subendothelial deposits. Whoa, look at this. This is a closer view of this one, just in case you were having problems with vision. Okay, here's that same one. Isn't that nice and big? What are these? Podocytes. What are those spaces between them? Huh? Slit pores. Are they fused? No. Because if they were fused, then it would be what? Nephrotic syndrome. But they ain't fused. Okay? And here's the lumen. There's your endothelial cells, and there's that immune deposit. Notice this is all, this is normal basement membrane there. This is all, look at that. Look how diffuse that is, that electron, those immune complexes are. That's because it's so big, they can't get all the way through that basement membrane. Okay, how many of you had crescent rolls for breakfast? None of you. So I guess we just go on to the next slide. Okay, I want you to look at this. What's this right in here? Glomerulus. Okay, but it looks like it's being surrounded by a bunch of proliferating cells that must be parietal epithelial cells because it's not in the glomerulus. And doesn't this look like a crescent around it if you look at it? There's a crescent, kind of a crescent look to it. That's why it's called crescentic glomerulonephritis. This is the worst glomerulonephritis you can have because within about 3 months, you go into acute renal failure and you'll die unless you're on dialysis. So crescent rolls might taste good, but if you have them in your glomerulus, you're going to die. Now, many, many diseases can have crescentic glomerulonephritis, but the only one you need to know is Goodpasture syndrome. Goodpasture syndrome classically produces a crescentic glomerulonephritis. Now, we're still nephritic, guys. We haven't left nephritic yet, so it's a nephritic syndrome. But when we do the biopsy, we see crescents, which means portends a bad diagnosis. Bad diagnosis. And it's most commonly seen in Goodpasture syndrome. There are many others. You don't need to know them. But if you're interested, polyarteritis nodosa, Wegener's granulomatosis, and other types of things can end up this way. With me so far? Hopefully this is not too hard so far because I don't think it's hard. When you're the one that's teaching us, I hope it's not hard for you. Okay. We're done with nephritic. Say good. Okay. Now, is this a red blood cell cast? Say no. This is a polarized specimen, and these are called Maltese crosses. Why? Because they look like the Christian cross in the island of Malta, which I happened to have visited in the Navy when I was parachuted in because I was a commando. You don't actually believe that, do you? You did. You believed it. You believed it because you wanted to believe it. No. There's no way in God's green earth I'm going to jump out of a plane with something hanging on my back that some idiot packed. Not a chance. Not a chance. I have a basic rule of thumb. I never, ever do any sport where my life depends on a piece of equipment, i.e. rock climbing, i.e. jumping out of a plane, i.e. having a little a rubber thing called a bungee hanging to me. Putting a tank with air on my back and breathing through it and going under the water. Doesn't qualify. How about a snorkel? That's okay. A snorkel's fine because you can't go too far, get into too much trouble. My basic rule of thumb, just to make sure that you understand that. So I might be macho sounding, but actually, I'm a total coward related to those things. Actually, this is cholesterol in your urine. And when you polarize it, it looks like a Maltese cross. And it is the pathognomonic cast of nephrotic syndrome. You only see it in nephrotic syndrome. So what's the definition? The definition is greater than 3.5 grams for 24 hours, presence of fatty casts in the urine, okay? And you're also, of course, going to have ascites probably and pitting edema and all that kind of stuff along with it. You run the risk of spontaneous peritonitis if you're a kid, organism, strep pneumonia if you're an adult, E. coli. There you go. Okay. This picture's been on many, many, many boards, as was that RBC cast that you saw for nephritic. All right, let's look at this. This is a this is an electron micrograph from an 8-year-old boy that had an upper respiratory infection 1 week ago and now looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. This kid is as diffusely, has a pitting edema all over the body, has ascites. We call it anasarca when it's just literally all over the place. He's normotensive. He doesn't have a high blood pressure. Actually, they do not do renal biopsies anymore, but I'll say they did. They did a renal biopsy in this kid. They did an H&E stain, didn't see anything. It was absolutely normal appearing glomerulus, did immunofluorescence, nothing. Didn't see anything there. Then they did an electron micrograph. You're looking at it. What's that? It's a red blood cell. So what must that be in? Glomerulocapillary lumen. If that's true, then these little jobbies here must be endothelial cells. Okay? All right. And what's this here? Basic membrane. Anybody see electron dense deposits in there? I don't see any. Looks perfectly clear to me. What's this side? Podocytes. Let's just follow. Let's follow it along. Fused. Fused, 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 fused. It's not fused. Therefore, it's not fused. But the most of the rest of it is. Okay? Don't believe this all or none thing like most medical students do. Okay? So, yeah. Okay, that one didn't fuse yet. Maybe 1 hour from now would have been. Okay? Fusion of the podocytes. That's always seen in any cause of nephrotic syndrome. You always see fusion of the podocytes. So we haven't seen anything on H&E. You got a kid with nephrotic syndrome. We've got Maltese crosses and all that crap in our urine. What's the kid have? Lipoid nephrosis. Now, they still haven't figured out why it is that when the albumin levels go down very, very low because of losing all that albumin, why it is that the liver makes more cholesterol. Nobody really knows that. All patients with nephrotic syndrome have hypercholesterolemia. And since they have glomerular disease, then some of that cholesterol can get into the urine, and that's why you form casts with cholesterol. You don't normally have cholesterol in your urine. Only in nephrotic syndrome would it be there. And it looks like Maltese crosses. This is called lipoid nephrosis, lipoid giving honor to the presence of cholesterol in the urine. Lipoid lipid, lipoid nephrosis. Another name, minimal chain disease, is another term. So why is this happening? The answer is that they've lost their negative charge to their glomerular basement membrane. So they have no negative charge, and actually albumin actually now can get through. And so they actually have a very selective proteinuria. The only protein that's really increased in their urine is albumin, and it's greater than 3.5 grams in 24 hours. You treat it with corticosteroids in a few months, usually get a remission, might come back again, but after about a year or so, it goes away. Never to come back again. So this is the most common cause of nephrotic syndrome in kids. Okay. This is a patient who's HIV positive. In fact, he's actually got an AIDS-defining lesion already, so he has AIDS. And you notice that he has pitting edema. So you check his urine out, and you notice it's greater than 3.5 grams in 24 hours. He's got fatty casts in his urine. He has hypertension, unlike kid with lipoid nephrosis. So you do a biopsy. You already know what you're going to see because it's the most common cause of nephrotic syndrome in AIDS patients anyway. And so we look at it and we see that some of the glomeruli are totally normal. Others are abnormal, but only a part of the glomerulus. Notice that's okay, but then this little part. And so we said we can't call that focal for reasons I've already explained. We're going to call this focal segmental, and since the immunofluorescence on this and electron microscopy didn't show electron dense deposits, it's called glomerulosclerosis. So it's focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, and that's what this is. It's the most common glomerular lesion in AIDS patients, and I might also add intravenous drug abusers. They both get this type of disease. This is next to rapidly progressive crescentic glomerulonephritis, the next worst glomerular disease you can have. So in other words, nothing's good in an AIDS patient. I mean, let's just figure it out. I mean, nothing's good. Nothing's going to have a good prognosis. Everything's going to be bad. Do they ask this? Absolutely. Absolutely. You better believe it. All right, let's look at this one. This is an adult. This patient has pitting edema in the whole bit, fatty cast the whole bit, greater than 3.5 grams the whole bit. So you biopsy the dude. All the glomeruli look like this. Now, I think you could pretty well eyeball this and say that there's not a whole lot of dots there. So the nuclei, the number of cells of nuclei there is not over 100. So it's not a proliferative. But I think look how prominent those basement membranes are. They're thick. This is diffuse membranous glomerulonephritis. This is the most common cause of nephrotic syndrome in adults. I'm not going to show you the electron microscopy because I'm just going to tell you it's subepithelial, and you already know what a subepithelial deposit is, so why look at another one and get yourself all nervous? Now, what an interesting thing that happens. When you do silver stains on these patients and you magnify them, you can actually see that's the capillary lumen. This must be an endothelial, that must be the basement membrane there. And then this is the epithelial site. It looks like you put your finger in a 220 socket. Okay, it looks like your hair has gone in. That's why this is called hair on end appearance or epimembranous spikes. These actually are the immunocomplexes under silver stain, and they like this. So whenever you see on the outside of the glomerular capillary these little spike-like lesions, and they'll give you a good history for nephrotic syndrome, that's diffuse membranous glomerulonephritis. It's the only one that looks like that. Now, lots of things can cause this, literally hundreds, from drugs to infections to cancer to nothing. Okay, and some of the drugs are very interesting, like nonsteroidals. Nonsteroidals can produce nephrotic syndrome, and this is the one it produces. Hepatitis B, as in boy, can produce this one, diffuse membranous glomerulonephritis. Our little friend captopril, the king of the treatment of heart failure, the king of the treatment of diabetic nephropathy, has a bad side. It can also produce nephrotic syndrome. So drugs, lots of drugs can do this. Infections, hepatitis B I already mentioned, P. malariae, in other words, malaria, syphilis, okay, all these things can also produce. A cancer can do this too. It could be a colon cancer, and the immune complex of CEA, anti-CEA antibodies can produce this. It's not good. It smolders around a little bit, but eventually you go into renal failure and you potentially could die unless you get a renal transplant. And that's all I really have to say about diffuse membranous glomerulonephritis. Almost done, guys, actually, with these. In fact, this is about the last one. This is type 1 and type 2 membranoproliferative glomerulonephritis. Is it endonitis? Does it end in itis? Therefore, then it's an immune complex. Okay. Now, type 1 membranoproliferative glomerulonephritis has a relationship with hepatitis C. Now, how are you going to remember that? Okay. Membranous B. Okay, what's the next letter after B? C. Membranoproliferative. C. In other words, you're adding more to the membranous. Proliferative is the next letter up. C. So membranous B, membranoproliferative C. Now, there's another relationship with C, isn't there? Cryoglobulinemia, remember that? There's another relationship with B. It's a vasculitis. Could you tell me what that is? Polyarteritis nodosa. Good, now you're making integrations. Now you're making integrations. All right. So that's the type 1 one. It's actually a sub-endothelial deposit. It produces nephrotic syndrome. Type 2 is a little less common. And in this one, there's an autoantibody against C3. It's called the C3 nephritic factors. And so what happens is it causes C3 convertase to become overactive, and it's constantly breaking complement down. So the lowest complement levels that you'll ever see in any glomerulonephritis is seen in type 2 disease. And it's called dense deposit disease because the entire basement membrane is an immune complex. All right. You've heard of the term tram tracking? Huh? Isn't that stupid that they imagine memorized tram tracks? Well, the tram tracks, and this is not to be confused with Amtrak, this is tram track, okay, is due to this, guys. Watch this. This is an endothelial cell right there. Okay. These are mesangial cells, the structural component of a glomerular capillary. And notice that the mesangial cell is extending itself between the basement membrane, which is this black thing, and the endothelial cell. So that would make this look like a tram track, because you can't see this, but you could see that, you could see that, that would be clear, that looks like a track. And so that's all tram tracking is this kind of this mesangial process going in between the endothelial cell and the basement membrane, and produces that. Tram tracking, membranoproliferative, nephrotic syndrome. Done. 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 Look at this. I call this Christmas ball disease. Oh, yeah? I call it golf ball disease. Good for you. Good for you. All right. I don't care what you call it. But when you see these big round balls on H&E stain, that is diabetic glomerulosclerosis. This is diabetic renal disease. All right, now let's discuss this one, because this one is very, very, very importante. That means important. All right, now, I'm going to make this for fun, the afferent arterial and the efferent arterial. Does anyone notice anything unusual about the color? What's this called when you have excess red in it? Hyaline arteriolosclerosis. Didn't we say that was a small vessel disease of diabetes and hypertension? Didn't we? Okay, so we're seeing it here, aren't we? Okay, now watch this. The very first vessel that is hyalinized is the efferent arterial. I don't know why, but it is. So let's make believe this is normal. That's the afferent. Let's say this one is hyalinized. All right, now, you have renal fizz, so you should be able to tell me that if the lumen is narrow in the efferent arterial, what the glomerular filtration rate should be. Increase. Whoa, very good. You learned that. That's right. So what's the creatinine clearance? Increased. So you mean, am I saying that in early diabetic nephropathy that you actually have an increased creatinine clearance and glomerular filtration rate? Yep. Why? Because the efferent arterial is hyalinized and it's kind of obstructed. Is that bad? Well, I would think that glomerulus is going to take quite a pounding there for about maybe 10 years. Don't you think that maybe that might injure it a little bit? That's called hyperfiltration damage. Let's throw something in on this, though. What did we say was the process where glucose attached to an amino acid in a protein? What do we call that? Non-enzymatic glycosylation. So let's say that's also going on because this patient's not watching themselves too well. And so we're non-enzymatically glycosylating the glomerular basement membrane. Ooh. What did we say would happen when you glycosylate a basement membrane? What does it make it permeable to? Protein. Now, I want you to put this two together. You got all this pressure on the glomerular capillary because of the efferent arterial, and you're also non-enzymatically glycosylating the glomerular basement membrane, rendering it permeable to protein. Do you think maybe you're going to start spilling some protein in the urine? What do you think? Big time. That's called, when you initially start seeing it, that's called microalbuminuria. Will the standard dipstick for protein detect that? Nope, not sensitive enough. There are special dipsticks that are available that can detect those small amounts. They're called microalbuminuria dipsticks. Now, what does it mean when your diabetic patient has a positive dipstick for microalbumin? What are you going to do about it? You're going to give them an ACE. You're going to give them an angiotensin-converting enzyme. Why? Because you want to stop the progression of this. Well, how is it going to do that? All right. Listen up. The afferent arterial and its caliber is controlled by who? PGE2. Okay? The efferent arterial's caliber is controlled by angiotensin 2. And what does it normally do to the efferent arterial? Constrict it. That's the answer. Can you put it together? If you give a person an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, what happens to angiotensin 2 levels? It decreases. So if it was decreased and you took off the vasoconstricted element that it normally has on it, even though this was hyalinized a little bit, wouldn't it open up the lumen a little bit? Yes or no? Would that take the pressure off the glomerulus? Would that decrease the glomerular filtration rate and also kind of decrease the amount of damage from that constant pounding on that glomerulus? Yes, that's how it works. Now, obviously, it's not going to do dork if you don't get on that patient and say, buddy, you got to get your glycosylated hemoglobin under 6% because this ACE inhibitor is not magic. It's taking the pressure off your glomerulus, but you have to get that glucose in a normal range because it has nothing to do with non-enzymatic glycosylation. The ACE inhibitor is not going to prevent that. So you got to have perfect glycemic control from now on. Otherwise, you're going to go into chronic renal disease. You got to read them the Riot Act. And if they can do that, this ACE inhibitor will prevent the progression of the disease. Not only that, it also has an added benefit. Diabetics commonly have hypertension. It'll control their hypertension as well. So you get two for one with an ACE inhibitor when you're treating them to prevent the progression of diabetic glomerulosclerosis. Now, some of you are probably wondering, what is this pink crap? Actually, it's type 4 collagen in the mesangium. It just builds up in there. In patients that have diabetes, and it forms these big, big circles. I kind of like the fact that they're there because it's very easy for students when they see a picture and they see these big old circles, these big old balls. Remember, diabetic glomerulosclerosis, Christmas ball disease, or golf ball disease, whatever you want to call it, whatever, just remember these look like balls in here, okay, that's fine. And then kind of look around, see if you can see the afferent and efferent, and always put it in the picture so you can see that this hyaline arteriosclerosis, say, I know this is a diabetic kidney, okay. Some people call Kimmel-Still-Wilson's disease. They don't usually like to use names on exams. The correct term is nodular glomerulosclerosis. Understand? That's it for diabetes. Okay, amyloid. One of the favorite places for amyloid to deposit is in the kidneys. Remember, amyloid is a special protein, as we told you. When you stain it with Congo red and then you polarize it, it has an apple green biry fringes. Now, this isn't the best picture of that. Okay, but this is supposed to be apple green birefringence, but it doesn't look like it, so I'm going to help you. You know what a Granny Smith apple looks like? That light green? That's exactly what amyloid is supposed to look like when you polarize it after you do a Congo red stain. When they talk about apple green birefringence, it's the exact same color as the green color on a Granny Smith apple. So the next time you see a Granny Smith apple, and it's green, and you bite into it, say, I'm biting into amyloid. Okay, and that way you remember. Also, if you have no idea what a fruity breath is and diabetic ketoacidosis, get juicy fruit gum and just smell what it looks like. Don't let the people in the front desk see you, otherwise you'll have to bite. You smell it, you buy it type of thing. Okay, that smell is what acetone smells like on the breath. And then you got it all made. So in other words, we haven't left nephrotic syndrome because I didn't say we left it yet. So am I saying that diabetic nephropathy is associated with nephrotic syndrome? Absolutely. And am I saying that amyloid is associated with nephrotic syndrome? Absolutely. So what do we have? A lot more diseases than with nephritic, huh? We've got lipoid nephrosis, most common cause in kids. Focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, IV drug abuse, AIDS. Diffuse membranous glomerulonephritis, most common one in adults. Type 1, type 2, membranoproliferative glomerulonephritis. Type 1, hepatitis C relationship. Type 2, autoantibody against C3, lower C complement levels. Then we have diabetic glomerulosclerosis and amyloid, all nephrotic syndrome. Okay. The last one is the most common one. And it doesn't fit either one of these things. I wish it did, but it doesn't. And that's IgA glomerulonephritis, otherwise known as Burgers, not to be confused with Boerger's disease. Remember, I alluded to the fact that IgA glomerulonephritis is probably a variant, if not the same thing, as Henoch-Schönlein's purpura. The reason for that is it is an immunocomplex disease, IgA, anti-IgA antibodies, and so is Henoch-Schönlein's purpura. And if you recall my little scenario I gave you with the palpable purpura and the buttocks and legs, I said it was polyarthritis, palpable purpura, a little bit of GI bleed, and hematuria and RBC cast, remember? So I guess it fits a little bit more nephritic than nephrotic, so maybe we can put it under that if you want. When you do immunofluorescence, All of it's taken up in the mesangium. That's where all those immune complexes are. Here's how it presents, guys. In kids, it presents with episodic episodes of gross hematuria. Goes away. Might come back maybe a couple years later. In adults, it usually presents as episodic bouts of microscopic hematuria. And so that's how it usually goes. You know, you just have a little bit of hematuria. You go to the doc, you know, and they see RBC cast in there. And then it goes away. Okay? Maybe a couple months later, after a cold or something like that, you start noticing it again. It's that kind of thing. On and off, on and off. Hematuria, RBC cast, a little bit of proteinuria, no hypertension. And then, of course, the nephrologist is thinking in their head without telling you, when it starts getting a little bit worse, okay, maybe 10 years down the pike, I'm going to biopsy them and prove that what it is, what I think it is. And then they'll do that, and they'll prove that it's IgA glomerulonephritis. Eventually, over 10, 15, 20 years, it'll do a job on you. So it's not exactly benign. But it is the most common of all the glomerulonephritises, and it is type 3 disease. Now we're done. Okay, was that bad? Is it doable? Is it something that you have to go over again, but it's doable? Okay, that you can remember those things. Okay, I think it should be. All right, now because I have to take a pee so bad, I'm actually feeling kind of urea thing. Why don't we take our break now, okay? And 10 minutes, I'm still not giving you time off just because I have to pee, okay? So it's 3:46 plus 10 is roughly 3:56. When you hear me talking, you know it's time.